Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Macy, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Rangers, three games. Padres are 3-3 so far on this nine-game trip. Where would you like to start, Ryan?
I'd like to start with the story that you had in today's paper, Kevin. The Padres just lost a series to St. Louis, lost 2-3, looked a little bit better offensively in game three there. The story that you're writing is essentially, that you wrote, is essentially about their approach and about what has worked and not worked. And frankly, you talk about Steven Souza Jr., who, if you only lived in Padres Twitter land, you would think should have been fired 2 weeks ago. Does not look like that's going to happen, at least not in the immediate future, correct?
Right. I mean, we all know, and because this happens, you get skeptical when someone gets like votes of confidence. But I can't stress enough how sincere Craig Stammen's votes of confidence and the way other people talk about Steven Souza. Look, you can't say that it would never happen during the season, but I mean, it does not appear by like any measure that he would be gone. The Padres have looked, as I have, obviously they've looked more extensively, more expertly, you would hope, at their process, at how they go about things, the information being disseminated and how it's disseminated. And they started that early in the season because it didn't start out so well. And they believe that, you know, for lack of a better phrasing, the failure's on the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is their approach? I mean, simplify it to me here and for our audience. What is Steven Souza's approach and how is it different from that of Victor Rodriguez?
You know, the reality is it's really not like, you know, Victor was Petco Park hitting, line drives, used the whole field. Maybe not so much of that from in terms of like use the whole field and don't, you know, it's really the same. Let the power come to you. Line drives. I mean, it's guys like it. Hitting is super complicated because you're going right against pitchers, but hitting's also the hitting coach isn't going to complicate it anymore for you. Right. Yes. A lot of information. I'm not saying that they've been perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I wouldn't know how imperfect other than you hear, oh, a lot of information. Oh, okay, fine. But like, really, is it? Or is that what some people that are maybe familiar with the hitters are saying when the hitters are struggling? Right. I mean, look, here's the facts. The first week of the season, the Padres are horrible. For 20 games after that, so basically all through April, they were one of the best teams in the major leagues in every metric. Hard hits, results, runs per game, you know, everything. For another 35 games, they were as bad as you could almost possibly be. So good, then bad. Interesting. And now good, not as good, but much, much better for most of the past nine games. It's funny you said they were better in the final game of the St. Louis series. Yeah, they would have to be. They got on base seven times in the first two games, which is their fewest in 12 years in a two-game span. I mean, it was horrendous. But take the last game, which was Wednesday, take the eight games, six or eight games before that, and you're seeing a team that seems to be trending in the right direction, getting back to what they were doing. And so, look, how many hitting coaches do you want is my question.
Exactly. There's a long list of guys who got fired at Petco Park by the Padres because the thought was that maybe it was the hitting coach's fault. You know, Victor Rodriguez obviously moved on to the Houston Astros. He was not pushed out by any stretch of the imagination, but I think organizationally they believed that a slightly tweaked approach was needed. They needed more power coming into this year, and that really has not materialized.
No, it hasn't, though that's what's saving their numbers, really. I mean, they're like middle of the pack in home runs. Manny Machado would be completely worthless if he didn't have a dozen home runs, right? Like, you throw a fastball or really throw anything in the middle of the zone, and Gavin Sheets is generally going to hit it really far. So without Tatis hitting homers and the Padres being in the middle of the pack, I'd say that they have found their, you know, found their power to some extent. Now, like, also that brings me to the point that I've been making all year. Like, a lot of this isn't new. I just felt like it needed to be said again about Steven Souza and some of the things that the Padres are saying and that are real. But Tatis without the homers, Jackson Merrill a week and a half ago was hitting 198. Manny Machado, after a surge over the last eight games, is hitting 177.
Right.
That's the top of your order. And so you want to talk about how bad the Padres are. And it's like, well, and Steven Souza did not come in here. I feel like this can go without saying. Mm-hmm. Like, he would have been fired the second day if he came in here and decided that he wanted to make over the top three players.
Right.
Like we get on a narrative, all of us tend to, some more than others, and then we kind of can't get off of it like a pit bull, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what about Manny Machado, you know, seeing somebody else during the offseason, you know, mm-hmm. like a lot of players do, he's trying to get better and it throws him off course. What about Fernando Tatis Jr. trying a whole bunch of different things during the season and he gets off course? What about Jackson Merrill being 24 years old and he tries a bunch of different things and getting mm-hmm. off course? Like, I'm not saying that Steven Souza, the other hitting coaches do not work with those guys, but like everybody knows for the most part, like the top guys are the top guys. You're not messing with them.
But I think it's human nature too. And I will give our readers and viewers and listeners here a little bit of grace here. I think it's easy to look at a lineup that returned almost entirely intact, right? To look at a middle of the order that is locked in almost to a man to contracts that stretch out for the next friggin' decade. To look at that list and go, okay, well, what's changed? Well,
absolutely.
There are no new players. There's no really new lineup. There's a new manager and there's a new hitting coach. And I think it's human nature to go, okay, well, what is different? Well, it's only Steven Souza. Right. Or it's only Craig Stammen. You're grimacing a little.
Sure. But then like what I just say, I mean, absolutely, right. Ryan, absolutely. But that's where I get into the whole pit bull thing is. Right. So you get answers and you go, no, it's Steven Souza. Just right. like it was name any of the last dozen. Who was your hitting coach in 2020 when the Padres had some of the same players, including two that absolutely, you know, were amazing. And in 2020 and the team had like a, you know, 1,200 OPS. I'm exaggerating, but it was amazing. Who was the hitting coach? You don't know, and I can barely remember.
Was it Alan Zinter?
No, it was not. It was Damian Easley. And he was fired the next freaking year.
That's right.
Okay? Look, and I might be wrong. I mean, I'm just making this off the top of my head. Like, come on. Right. Like, when I make a typo, is that your fault?
No.
Okay.
No.
Would you have caught it? Oh, I guess you could have, right? But like, what if I'm making typos like all over the place? Can you catch everyone? Like, I'm sorry. I'm getting worked up because this is such a ridiculous argument. And Steven Souza might be the worst hitting coach in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's still a ridiculous argument. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? That like, it's the hitting coach. Oh, really? Is the hitting coach making $30 million?
Well, it's funny. We talk about managers not maybe mattering as much as they used to, right? Because so much is data-driven. So much of it is front office-driven. Not necessarily the case with the San Diego Padres. Not necessarily. But if managers mean less than they ever have, what are hitting coaches? Right? It's like blaming a football team for its cornerbacks coach. Right? Like, at some point, it's the players. Though, and you make a great point in this story, and if you haven't read it yet, please do yourself a favor. Go read it. Is that there's reason to believe that things are actually trending in the right direction. With the exception of the home run outage, Fernando Tatis Jr. has been a good to very good hitter, especially recently. Jackson Merrill, who in many ways had nowhere to go but up, is actually going up and hitting better and playing better. And Manny Machado, like you said, is on a little bit of a heater, continues to provide almost all the power for the Padres, him and Gavin Sheets. There's reason to think that things are going to trend in the right direction.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, I guess Souza must have been on vacation those 20 games, which is not a small sample size when you're 73 games in,
right.
In April, right? Like, I mean, did he not start messing them up until May? I mean, so it's just at some point, like at what point will they start paying these hitting coaches $30 million a year? If they're so important. Now, I'm not saying that Steven Souza is the best hitting coach ever. He hasn't made mistakes or that he couldn't do more or whatever. In fact, like by all accounts, he's not the problem, but I'm not even saying that he isn't. Like, I'm not in the batting cage. I'm not in the hitters meetings. I do talk to probably more people than anybody else, but I couldn't vouch for him. Like, and I wouldn't give him a nickel because I don't have one. I'm just like, really? Like, this is the most convenient thing you could possibly do. And by the way, teams have fallen prey to it. It is the biggest turnover by far, like exponentially over any other position or on a coaching staff. And I feel like people really are overlooking, and I have it here recently, but I've done it several times throughout the season, overlooking that if Jackson Merrill were league average, which would still be disappointing, Manny Machado were league average, which would still be disappointing, and Fernando Tatis Jr. had, let's say, 5 more home runs, still be disappointing. Mm-hmm. Would we be talking about the offense?
No, this team would be four wins better, probably, also.
At least, because you'd be talking about the timing of those hits, too. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, inevitably, a few of them would have had to have come in big moments. I mean, 2 or 3. Like, you know, which is an underselling, would have to have come in big moments, and they'd be better, and the numbers would be a lot better. Even that, and I didn't say if they were having great seasons or the seasons they're expected to. Mm-hmm. I'm saying if they had like average seasons so far. Well,
and let's talk about this. There is a belief among the fan base, and I think throughout baseball, that Ruben Niebla is a pretty darn good pitching coach, right?
Great point, I think, where you're going.
He's the associate manager, whatever the heck they call him. He's got a presumably raise an extension this last mm-hmm. offseason. He's somebody who is very highly regarded throughout the league. Look at the Padres' pitching numbers. Look at the Padres' starting pitching, right?
Ryan,
it's not Ruben Niebla's fault that they're not pitching, because most people can go, well, they're missing 2 of their best 3 starting pitchers. Walker Buehler's a flyer. The Matt Waldron experiment didn't go well. Germán Márquez is hurt. I mean, you can look at that stuff and sort of in context go, well, yeah, it's not really his fault. It doesn't seem as if Steven Souza has built up any of that equity, at least among the fan base, where they would say, well, you know, maybe if the hitters hit better, the hitting coach wouldn't be in trouble.
Right. And right into your first argument, like, obviously they're missing people on the pitching staff, which they're not offensively, really.
We're missing a left fielder. We can start there.
Right. Okay. But they were bad before he was gone, and he was bad. So, but no, you absolutely. And it is part to do with the equity and it, you know, that Ruben's built up by proving himself. But is it Ruben's fault that Michael King hasn't found it yet? Like, I mean, though, yeah, it's the hitting coach. It is wild. I think probably direct correlation to hitting just becoming harder, right? Because of the pitching and all that. Like, I mean, that's probably why we've had all this turnover. To be honest with you, like, I used to be the guy who would kill for a 2-1 game. I really love good pitching, right? But that was generally also back in the days of Maddox and all that, where it was like, man, you could really tell that pitcher was really good. Now with the high velocity, all the different spin, like, The pitching's just become so dominant. Like, I'm quite honestly pretty tired of it.
What's the solution there in 30 seconds or less?
I got no idea, because you don't want to do things that then harm the pitchers, right? You don't want to lower the mound to make it further away. I honestly don't know. Like, mm-hmm. and I haven't talked to anybody who does, though they've thrown around all those things. Mm-hmm. What, give them 5 seconds to pitch? Right. Yeah, but I do believe, because they've done some wonderful things to make this game better, mm-hmm. pitch clock and that sort mm-hmm. of thing. I do believe that something needs to neutralize the mm-hmm. dominance of pitchers. Maybe I wouldn't feel that way if I was watching the Dodgers.
Right. Keep in mind, too, we watch a game now in which the National League has a designated hitter. Every uniform has an ad patch on it. You know, we can go down the list. The things that were sacrosanct in baseball 30 years ago aren't necessarily sacrosanct anymore. I wonder if they would look into moving the mound back or down or something.
Yeah, you'd have to look into the science of that to make sure you're not further harming pitchers or further endangering pitchers. I really don't know. But I've heard that talked about, like, as possibilities, but not by anybody who could actually do it.
Right. Kevin, if I could break 65 throwing a fastball. That would be a mild surprise in my world. Padres taking on the Texas Rangers, 3-game series starting tonight, 5 o'clock. Let's go through the pitching here just a little bit. Quick overview. Padres are 3 games over .500, 35-32, second place in the National League West, but a distant second. Texas Rangers are 4 games under .500. They're third in the AL West under former Padre. There's that word again, associate manager, Skip Schumacher, longtime Padre coach and very still highly regarded within the organization. Am I right?
Yep.
Great. Let's get into it. Randy Vasquez tonight going up against Jacob DeGrom. Hey, welcome to Texas. Here's Jacob DeGrom. He's 5-4 with a 3.17 ERA, two-time National League Cy Young Award winner, has allowed two or fewer earned runs in each of his last four starts, and leads the American League with 10.4 strikeouts per 9 innings. Out of the frying pan and into the fire here, Kevin.
So you have this metric, Stuff Plus, and right. Just in short, based on velocity, spin, release point, movement on pitches, this formula is applied and it measures the nastiness of a pitcher's arsenal. DeGrom is, I think, 7th in Stuff Plus. Of the top 11 pitchers in Stuff Plus, the Padres, this will be the 8th one they faced. And they faced Christopher Sanchez twice. And a lot of them have been recently. The Padres are getting no breaks. But, you know, look, that's the major leagues. But, yeah, here comes Jacob DeGrom. Tomorrow night's no treat either.
No, tomorrow night is not a treat. Walker Buehler going up against Nathan
Eovaldi. That's a treat. I love watching Walker, but yes.
Yes. Walker Buehler. And again, I would recommend, Annie Heilbrun has a wonderful Q&A with Walker Buehler that's on our website right now. It'll run in Sunday's paper.
Really good.
Yeah, really good. Walker Buehler's trending in the right direction. He's allowed two or fewer earned runs in 6 of his last 7 starts. He's gone 5-2 in his last 7 starts. But Nathan Eovaldi, you know what? Those numbers, 6-7 with a 4.2 ERA. He has a 5.2 ERA over his last 5 starts. Don't care. This guy is really good and has had a borderline excellent major league career, despite probably never being the man on his team.
Yeah. There was a point this year where it was like 8 starts that he was really good. And that is, maybe I'm tainted because I always expect, hey, if it's Nathan Eovaldi and at any time recently he's been good, oh, he'll be good when I see him pitch, because I'll be seeing him pitch when I'm in the course of doing my job covering the Padres. So I think he's a heck of a pitcher, and they got to focus on Jacob DeGrom tonight, but that's a good one too,
right? Does it get easier on Sunday, Kevin? No, it does not. Lucas Giolito goes up against Mackenzie Gore. We may remember Mackenzie Gore. He's a former Padres first round pick, was in the Juan Soto trade, dealt to Texas this last offseason. You know what? He went five straight starts without giving up a home run, allowed 2 in his last start, has struggled against the Padres in his career, but there's an asterisk there. He was pitching for a very, very, very bad Nationals team.
Yeah, he was the reason, though. I mean, he really was. Now, I don't know. I think, you said his last start. I thought there were some really good starts in there. He can be nasty, but I haven't seen him pitch well against the Padres.
No, that's true. That's true. And I'd like to talk real quick about starting pitching there. We list Lucas Giolito as the presumptive starter here, but Giolito's last time through the rotation, and Griffin Canning's last time through the rotation, the Padres went with an opener. Interesting strategy, something that they've done in the past a little, but something that they seem more open to now. How would you say it worked out the first time through?
Well, I would say, I bet you when Giolito gets right, because first off, you don't want to be doing the opener very often. Right. So if you're going to, try to limit that. And I would say that because Giolito has shown a little bit more promise, and that might be odd to some people because he hasn't, had maybe the couple good starts that Griffin Canning has, but he's less afraid to attack the zone. And there's just been some really good moments, and I would bet you that he starts sooner than later. I don't know that it'll be Sunday, but this opener thing was really psychological for Griffin Canning in terms of just getting them to come out of with a reliever's mindset. And it worked for the most part. It was markedly better. I don't know that either one of those guys are at this point what you're seeing from them. Now, look, it could be changed here in a month or whatever, but I don't know that either one of them are guys you're like, oh, wow, I hope they're pitching for the Padres in September when they're trying to get a playoff spot. I don't know that that's something you feel comfortable with right now, but they're trying to to manage it as best they can, and taking advantage of course, their deep bullpen to do that. But you don't want to have two openers per turn through the rotation.
No, not at all. No, I think it is interesting, the funny point about Canning. You know, what I liked about that when he came in there, he warmed up in the bullpen. Sometimes when you're the quote-unquote bulk guy, you walk out of the dugout and onto the mound when it's the second inning and it's your turn to pitch. He ran in from the bullpen like a reliever. To me, that goes, oh, yeah, that's a mental thing, right? This is him trying to – it's like he's coming in trying to close out a game and knowing it's important to fill the zone. You know, it's worth noting here, too, that I think that both of these guys are getting a little bit of leash here, because there's not help coming just around the corner here. Johnny Brito, maybe. Matt Waldron started a rehab assignment just the other day in El Paso, I believe. But we're still quite a ways off from Joe Musgrove or, oh my God.
Nick Pivetta.
Did I just blank on
you doing that for me? Yeah, it's usually me completely blanking on, you know. Who's it? What, Ryan? Ryan Finley? Yeah. Joe and Nick are making progress, and I think more progress than some fans thought, right? You just figured their arm was going to fall off. I would say Nick's a little bit ahead, has moved a little bit ahead, but that could change. Like Joe's not dealing with the Tommy John anymore. Like it really is this arthritis or like cartilage, is basically no cartilage in his elbow. We're talking about bone on bone. It's dealing with pain. It's knowing he's not going to be right. It's figuring out how he can do those things. And then Pivetta the other day, the reason I say he's a little bit ahead is that he started to actually mix in some pitches on flat ground, but from 60 feet, kind of throwing his arsenal, not full speed. But I'd say they're both up to about 85% effort at this point, and that, you know, maybe a couple weeks away from getting off a mound, and then that would be into early July, and then what I've heard from about both is after that, a month away from them pitching. So we're talking about early August at the earliest, and I just underlined that and bolded it, at the earliest.
At the earliest, and that is right around the time of baseball's trade deadline. I think it is important to note here, looking at the Padres' schedule going forward, this is going to be, I think, a crucial 2 or 3 week stretch for them. Just about everybody, I mean, I'm laughing a little bit here about the three pitchers the Padres have to face. It's a not good Rangers team, and they have three guys who could blank the Padres, and it wouldn't be a surprise.
Right.
And that's just the beginning. You then have to come home and you play. How's next week going to go, Kevin, when they play Atlanta for three and the Dodgers for three?
And they play the Atlanta for three, the Dodgers for three. Then they go to Chicago for three and the Dodgers for four.
And then they're home to face the Diamondbacks and the 2025 American League champion Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep. I mean, you probably see Dylan Cease there. And then I think you go after the break, you go Kansas City, Atlanta again. I think that's four. Is that correct? In Atlanta? Yep. And then Miami, which seems to beat everybody. I don't know what their record is right now, but the Marlins, every time I'm looking up, are beating like Shohei Ohtani or Jacob Mizorowski or somebody. Look, right now the Padres are at a point where, you know, they took care of business against mediocre teams, the Reds and the Orioles, but that's the first time we've seen them do that in a while. Mm-hmm. So we're at the point now where, the Padres need to come in here, and here I am again doing something that you and I don't usually do and say they got to go 2 or 3 or sweep this thing, and really feel good and it be offensive so that they're going in because hitting is contagious. Now they could then go get blanked by Chris Sale, who I think it lined up they were going to face either Monday or Tuesday. I haven't looked in the last day or two. But like hitting is contagious, man. And they need to get that going.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm looking and I'm just looking at their calendar in front of me here. The next series that you look at and go, could be a couple easy ones, would probably be a home series with the Colorado Rockies that starts at Petco Park on July the 20th. That's a week before the trade deadline. There are no easy ones between now and essentially the final 2 days of July.
There shouldn't The Royals should not be a problem, but like they were projected to be better and they have good players. Mm-hmm. Like they have some good hitters. And then they got that nasty Stephen Kolek guy.
Yeah, I remember him.
Not to mention Seth Lugo. And I believe still Michael Walker. My goodness. So yeah, you're right. Like, but again, I just feel like we'd feel different a month and a half ago, right? Mm-hmm. Like, right. But we've been watching this team now going, is there any night that you go in having great confidence in anything? Your faith in Michael King has been shaken. Your faith in the offense has been shaken. Like where, you know, what is it that you feel is like great about this team? So I get the absolute angst over this team. That is not something that I'm arguing.
Right. It was last Sunday, Kevin, when they were throwing at each other.
Last Saturday,
I remember making a mental note there that might have been the first easy one, quote unquote, they had had in weeks, right? Because in order to blow a team out, you got to score more than 3 runs in a game.
Yeah. You know what's crazy about the Padres? Mm-hmm. Everyone talks about the 4 runs and their great record, and it is. Mm-hmm. Guess what? When they score 3, they have a good record. Wow. Usually the 3-4 line is the demarcation for teams. The Padres' record when they score 3 runs, and I wrote about it the other day, is like, I mean, it's probably 5th or 6th best in the league. It's really good. So that just tells you they're not doing that enough. 3 runs. Like, right. 3 runs is nothing.
Yeah, it's not. Well, and when you have a great bullpen, 3 runs. Yeah.
That's why their record's so good.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode. Today is no different. We're still waiting on official Major League Baseball approval of the new Padres ownership, Jose E. Feliciano and Kwanzaa Jones. Any reason to think that this is held up for, that it's any cause for concern? I would have thought that we'd be done by now.
Yeah, except that like it's been a month since we knew that it was going to be a while. Like they're firming things up with the amount of their ownership, which they were candid about from the start. When I say they, the people that I talked to, people involved. And so, yeah, is it great news? I wouldn't say that. But is it that it won't happen? No, that's not my understanding. But yeah, they're still trying to get the constitution, the makeup of the ownership group all together.
Gotcha. So it's more a matter of, it's not that there's a concern, if I'm reading the tea leaves here, it's not that there's a concern necessarily about Feliciano and Jones. It's a matter of making sure that all the other cast of thousands who line up below them here have their ducks in a row.
Yeah. And that's why I've always said I remember explaining this right at the start. Like, it's not great that it's not like one owner, mm-hmm. but none of these guys that were bidding were going to own the whole thing. They might've had a bigger stake. I don't know exactly what, Joe Lake of the Pistons, Tom Gores. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their stake, but they weren't going to own the whole thing a la Steve Cohen or something. When you have other entities, and now in here you have some people unloading and then buying more. There's just more voices. There's more financing. There's more complications. Can't say that you should be thrilled about it, but I don't think you should be worried.
Right. One, I guess if there's a downside of selling your team for a record price, it's that there are very few human beings in the world worth anywhere near that. And so, of course, there's going to need to be a coalition, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not a whole lot of people can just write that one check.
Yeah, not even, the net worth of Feliciano and Jones is said to be $3.9 mm-hmm. million. Mm-hmm. That was the sale price, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you knew they weren't buying the whole thing. I mean, even if they had $3.9 billion, dollars to just throw there, which that's not what net worth means, right. It was going to need to be quite a coalition, actually. So we knew they were going to have between 40, 45, who knows, maybe they could get up 49%. I don't know. But they're going to own more than Peter Seidler.
Right, right, right. Kevin, it's like buying California real estate. You're purchasing something that's about the same as your net worth. Good luck making all of that work. Padres Rangers 3-game series starting tonight in Arlington, Texas. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.